Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this episode. I'm just going to give up on saying week, as I have been scolded by Sam Wotids. I don't know how to say her last name, but I love her dearly.
Isn't it Wojcicki?
Wojcicki? I don't know how you say it, but she scolded me that this is a weekly podcast and you must get back to doing the podcast weekly. You should have guest hosts do it.
Oh, we are doing this podcast weekly.
We are. We are. We've got today, Mr. Lazybones over here edited one and posted it, and then edited this one and posted it. So you're getting two. Two for the price of one day.
Nice.
As you're hearing this. And then Saturday, get this, Dan Peffers, who is sitting there.
I will get it.
I feel like I jumped the gun here. We'll get to that in a minute. First, to my left, Greg Lentz. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. I'm raring to go. I'm sitting here with the shrinking cast of We Are Libertarians, led by Dan Peffers. Dan, how are you doing?
I feel about 85 pounds short right now.
I know. You're 85 pounds smaller. You're somewhere between 50 and 75 pounds lighter, Greg. You don't even know.
You know, the chemo's been tough, but okay. I've been able to make it through it.
You had to make it awful. And then I'm down 40 pounds, but Peffers walked in. We haven't seen him since April,
Yeah. And
he looks emaciated.
I haven't seen him since he was talking about how to pick up women on the dance floors of Broderpool.
Oh, you mean by jiggling to the left?
Jiggling to the left. And I must say, sir, it is no longer jiggling to the left.
It's a slight
it's a hip bone to the left with you.
It's a bubble.
I mean, there's still plenty of loose skin there, not to paint a bad mental image, but...
Oh, gross.
There's plenty of jiggling going on.
All right, welcome to the episode of Loose Skin. All right, well, welcome to We Are Libertarians.
I totally shouldn't have said that.
This week we are
98%
Ebola-free. Not so sure about Peffers.
No, we're 67% Ebola-free.
Is that how you lost the weight, Ebola?
Just desperate times come for desperate measures. You get diagnosed with diabetes, you get Ebola to correct it. Yeah, overkill.
Wow, way to bring the show down, Peffers. You bring up your diabetes.
Welcome to We Are Hypochondriacs.
Okay,
yeah, no kidding.
So diabetes is the depressing one in that?
Yeah. Sitting here before the show talking about his allergies, his asthma, his diabetes, his Ebola.
Oh, nobody's confirmed I have asthma yet. But.
This is... So to make... Let's cheer the listeners up, because here's some news that they'll love. So in answer to the call of Sam Wotys... she's going to have to write me and tell me how to say this. Our dear and faithful redheaded listener from Georgia, who is a proud young mother, new mother, so congratulations for that. I would dare to say that Sam is my favorite listener.
I would say that except for her irrational love of the gentleman who has gone galt. And by Galt, I mean last name.
Chris Galt, that's right.
Yes.
Mm. Who we need to have back on.
I want to see Chris Galt. I would love to see Chris Galt.
I could make that happen if you really wanted to.
You know where the Gulch is?
Yes, I know where Galt's Gulch is.
Galt and I have actually talked about him coming back on the show, and he's willing to do it. He's just waiting for the call. But unfortunately, that call never came. but maybe one day. So she said, you gotta have guest host.
We'll need him again.
If you're not able to do it, you gotta give us something. So Saturday, Maya is coming over to my place.
What time?
And Harry Price and Maya are going to do a special episode of We Are Libertarians by themselves.
You're not
going to
be on?
I'm just going to sit over here and listen.
I would love to hang out.
You're more than welcome to come over.
It'd have to be really early, though. I have to be out of town, but otherwise I'd be there.
See, everybody's blaming me for our lack of production in 2014. You're just as bad, though, with all your trips. Where do you go?
It's bachelor parties. It's friends from out of town. It's like weddings like none other.
I'm even worse. I just don't call attention to myself.
Thanks, Peffers. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, the way to interrupt his speech right there.
No,
you just interrupted him in the middle to say, I don't like to draw attention to myself.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm a little out of it.
I know. It's all that weed. we'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to you in a minute. Just sit right there.
Yeah.
So you're just as busy as I am.
I'm at that age where everyone's getting married.
Right.
Everyone's getting married, and it has been... I'm looking forward to August 16th. That is my day of freedom. It'll be the... I've had one weekend since May, the second weekend in May open, and I went out of town and for a little bit of a vacation, and August 16th is my first... the next open weekend.
So when are you getting married, Greg?
I probably won't. I'm standing strong with the gay community until in Indiana everyone can get married or have a civil union. I am not going to cave because I am a supporter
of
it.
Did you not see the news like 3 weeks ago where gay people were getting married here in
Indiana? I was in line, but the line was so long the stay was issued. I mean, I was ready to, you know, I was ready to jump the broom, get hitched, whatever. Well, and you know what? It didn't work out.
You should have started out in Lake County.
You know, Mike Neal thwarted my efforts.
I'm so happy for you. And what's his name?
Christian.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Christian.
Last name.
He owns a software company. He lives in Seattle. Is that they wrote a book about him.
I'll tell
Is
you.
Is that a first or last name?
First name.
I'll tell right, you.
What's
Dan.
His last name?
I'll tell you, Dan.
Gray.
Oh, you got me all tied up in knots with that joke. Thank you, everybody. I'll be here all week. You know, Dan, that Greg is such a nice boy. Why did he never marry? So, Dan, do you want to talk about your future endeavors? Do you want to get into that at all?
Nah, I'm cool.
Okay.
I'm
all
just
right.
joking. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's not something I really want to get into.
All right.
I don't have a lot of information about it, so I don't want to make any announcements.
Well,
like
there could be listeners who are listening to this who might welcome you with open arms and support you.
That's true.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm looking to move to the Denver area. So, if anybody wants an anarchist roommate who is friendly in certain regards,
anarcho-capitalist, so he will pay rent. So he's not one of those anarcho-socialists like Noam Chomsky.
I believe in the rule of law and private property. And
let me help you out because you just creeped out everybody in the audience. I'm friendly in certain regards. What does that mean?
Put the lotion in the basket.
Right.
Did I say friendly in certain regards?
Yes. I'd F me. Would you F me?
I am a little out of it today.
It's all right. It's all good. And it's been a while.
It's been a while. I'm out of practice.
Yeah, I know.
I was getting good at my banter tours.
You were when we were doing it when Spangle was kidnapped by the Canadians.
Yeah.
You were on it. And on it, but we've been a little out of practice.
Yeah.
I still miss Chris, though. What's up with your brother? Where's he been?
He's been working over at a retail chain. I don't like saying people's employers very often.
Is he skinny now too, or is he still?
He's about the size he was when he was at FedEx.
Oh,
he's always been skinny, hasn't he?
Well, if you lose weight, does he have to lose weight? Like, is that the deal with you twins?
No, we're not twins.
Oh.
In fact. I mean, he still has a beard. I'm shaved right now. Well, I'm not
You're shaved, are you?
It's been a couple days.
You should just keep talking. This is great, Peppers. Keep going.
Man, this is only funny because you're seeing me. You're listening to me.
I'm shaved.
This.
I'm friendly in certain regards, which is like the weirdest thing you could
have. I'm getting put on the spot, too.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm still waiting for some information.
But I'm friendly in certain regards, and I'm shaved.
You know what? We should get on roommates.com and build him a profile. Seeking
roommate who is friendly in certain regards, yeah. But not necessarily
must others. Love shaved friendly people,
but must be okay with skipping a couple days for shaving.
Yeah. So, well, you've gone from a bear to an otter. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
Only certain listeners will understand that reference.
I think everybody who listens to us will understand that reference.
On to Twinkdom, son. On to Twinkdom.
Oh my!
Hey, it's the new era libertarians. Shit's about to get real. Okay.
Did you just call it the classiest libertarian show?
Yeah.
In the country.
Oh, man. Our critics won't even need to criticize us anymore.
There's not many libertarian podcasts out there. We're coming for you.
I can think of one.
We're coming for you off the air live.
Mm-hmm.
Look out, Libertarian Solution Podcast.
Yep.
You're next with your consistency and your professionalism.
Research.
Yeah.
And your sponsors.
Solutions.
Uh-huh.
Nah, Nick Koontz is a good guy. The rest of them I don't know about. But Nick's a good boy. All right. He's friendly in certain regards.
Jesus. I think it's this apartment, you know?
It's this apartment, that's right. I've just been...
Jiggle to the left, friendly in certain regards.
I live here and I'm out of my mind. Speaking of out of their minds.
Did you paint recently or something?
I did. I just needed extra chips. So let's get on to the topic of out of their mind by discussing a political candidate. So, you know, we don't do many candidate interviews. We never have. We did in the early days when this podcast was under the banner and sponsorship of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. And it was partially a promotional tool for the LPIN. Now we're long gone from those from the shackles of our former party masters.
We also have more listeners since then.
That's exactly right. Take that, libertarians. I don't know.
That should be a meme.
What was your
take
point?
Take that, libertarians.
You're like, we left the LPIN and now we're popular.
But, so quit listening.
Yeah. Take that, most of you who are Libertarian Party members. Feel bad about yourself. No, we just, time has marched on. We've grown. We've contracted and we've grown again. Some of us have done that physically. You know, the thing that we try not to do is we try to keep in mind that there are people listening across the nation. This is a multinational podcast. We're only blocked in one country, and that's by our request. The signal does not go across the northern border. We will not let this program be heard in Canada.
We have our own Iron Dome, you could say, of liberty against the Canadians.
And we are considering blocking this program in Idaho.
For sure.
Right. To keep one certain particular person from hearing this program.
The disease.
Yes. Or as I like to call the human Ebola, Josiah Crohn's.
Yes.
We try not to focus on local issues, interview local candidates. We get asked all the time, especially here locally, because we know the local, a lot of the people running for office. Hey, I'm running for city council in Indianapolis. Can I be on the podcast to promote my candidacy, or I'm running for Congress, or any of that? And it just doesn't really translate. I think
it's usually not interesting.
Yeah, we try to respect the people listening in California and even the people that live in Florida.
I mean, I'm not even interested in half these campaigns, and they're all in my state.
Exactly. But today we're going to make an exception because we want to talk about candidates in general. An issue arose here in Indiana, in Indiana Congressional District 2. We're not going to mention the candidate's name because the fact that we're even referencing him will give him a...
Oh, it's a him?
They. Yes, let's...
Oh, no, I couldn't tell from his picture.
Oh.
And the first shot has been fired. But... I'm sure that most of the people listening to this podcast, if you're active in libertarianism right now, you're probably, especially newbies. I think a lot of people, they get involved in politics, they become a libertarian, they start finding libertarian candidates working with them, they start kind of learning more about the libertarian community, they discover people like Jeffrey Tucker, the Mises Institute,
Julie B.
Julie Borowski, the Advocates for Self-Government, and then they kind of go further and further down the rabbit hole, and then their political efforts sort of cease. I know, Lord knows, that's happened to everyone in this room.
Yep.
Although, you know, I'm missing political action a little bit, but I still like to refer to myself as one of those do nothing libertarians for right now.
I'm usually asked to leave.
Yeah,
but it's because it's a bigger party.
Yeah. I get messages all the time asking you to leave this podcast.
Oh, yes. I get those as well. I like to show my mother and make her proud.
Your sister's a fan, at least.
She is. Actually, she's more a fan of me probably looking like an idiot on most of the pictures you tag me in on Facebook.
Hey, you're the one with the Photoshop skills. I never should have taught him Photoshop because Pepper sees embarrassing me every single day with his Chris Spangle memes.
They're never anti. They're very supportive, except of the nation of your
origin. We're very
origin.
Accepting of your Canadian citizenship.
A few of them have been a little racist, I'm just going to say.
How do you? How would you say that?
I'm just kidding. What were we talking about?
We were talking about...
So you get involved in campaigns, and when you're kind of watching West Wing and you're watching a lot of these political news shows... reading articles, and then you think, I'm going to dive in. I'm going to get involved in a campaign. So you probably think, oh, gee, it's going to look like it is on TV. And then you show up and you are radically disappointed, shocked.
Competence has no place in local politics.
That's exactly right. And it's not a Libertarian Party thing. It's a Republican and Democrat thing, too, especially the lower the race. So if it's a county constable or a township trustee race, if you have township trustees, here it's each county. We have 92 counties in Indiana, and they're broken into 9 separate townships as well. So Indiana has more government officials than you could possibly imagine.
Employment programs.
Right. And so each one of those townships have elected offices, too. So there's a lot of positions to run for. You're not going to raise $20,000 to run in a township race. Some do, because they bank the money for their next run as they move up the ladder. But by and large, campaigns, the more likely the campaign that you'll get involved in is one that is fairly disorganized and dysfunctional, and it really depends a lot on the candidate. Libertarian Party campaigns are generally like that as well. Even if it's a United States Senate campaign, it's going to resemble a lot, resemble a township trustee race for a Republican by and large. You know, the candidate, their family members, a few advisors, a few people. So Libertarian Party members have to be better at leadership than probably the other candidates do. What happens sometimes with some of these candidates is they think they're going to run, and they think that they're going to come to the Libertarian Party, and they think that their job will be to wax poetic and enjoy the limelight. As the words of wisdom fall out of their mouth, everyone will hear what they have to say, realize how brilliant it is, flock to them, and elect them to office. Now, of course, the candidate knows that little things have to be done in the campaign, like organizing volunteers, filing paperwork.
Staying in the race, even.
Staying in the race.
Compliance. Don't talking forget about to the compliance. Media.
Compliance with the various paperwork that you have to fill out. Now, that is left to the little people. And the little people have to be supplied. You know, the people that raise the money, that post things to the website, that all needs to be done by the little people of the Libertarian Party. Now, the reality is that if you run for office in the Libertarian Party, you are mostly doing everything. Just like if you're running for city council in Indianapolis, which is the 12th largest city, you're doing everything. If you're running as a Republican, okay? If you're running as a...
But think of how much they give up by changing parties.
Sure, no. I wasn't referencing anyone.
I know.
But the only campaigns that have full-time staff that do all the little things and let the candidates wax poetic are Republican congressional campaigns where there is where you are the likely winner. So if you are the Democrat in a 70-30 Republican district, you probably don't have a staff because the Republican has a staff, but you don't, because they can raise money. My point is there are very few campaigns that have staffs, that have major financial backing. A lot of it is just made up of well-meaning volunteers. And so a lot of times... You know, and I don't even know if I have a question. I'm just sort of waxing poetic myself. But a lot of times, candidates are disillusioned when they get into politics. They're going to put their names out there. They're going to put their names on the ballot. And then they realize, oh, I've got to actually do work. Now, political parties are an empty vessel. Political parties are there to serve a function. They're there to put you on the ballot and to connect you, to network you, with other like-minded individuals. The Libertarian Party, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Green Party, and any other party you can think of exists to serve as a tool for ballot access and to help network you with potential volunteers, potential donors, potential whatevers.
Access to the press, promotion of your platform,
right.
Many, many things.
Basic, you know, I always, when I worked at the Libertarian Party of Indiana for 4 years. I was the executive director. I did it day in, day out. I was full-time. I was one of just a handful of people that did that for any state party. And my job was air support. You know, I was there to troubleshoot. I had 100 candidates to help in the 2010 election, and each one of them were novice candidates. They didn't know how to run for office. They didn't know how to fill out paperwork. They couldn't remember when to file their paperwork. They didn't know how to recruit volunteers. They didn't know how to answer a question about applying the libertarian philosophy to county government. So my job was to be a sounding board to give advice and to troubleshoot and to help them with their paperwork, to make sure that they got on the ballot, to file their financial paperwork. My job was not to serve as the fixer, necessarily. Now, once we got into more, I don't want to say evolved, but more complicated, more technical campaigns, it did sort of become that, where, you know, with like Rupert's campaign, it was truly a statewide campaign, and there were
It was a Ross Perot type campaign, right, in Indiana.
It was a very big campaign, and there were a lot of problems and a lot of things that needed to be fixed. But, you know, by and large, my job was training. You know, if you go to the Libertarian Party of Indiana website, you look at the resources page, their YouTube page, a lot of that is what I did. I put it on YouTube. And you can see what the job of an executive director is. Now,
president of all libertarians.
That's right.
That's what it is.
So if you're thinking of, if you're running for office, if you're thinking about running for office, go check some of that stuff out. LibertarianTrainingCenter.com. I think that's still live. I should have checked that before I said it. But the LPIN, we put a lot of stuff together to make sure that when you accepted the nomination of your party, when you agreed and promised the delegates or the voters within your state party that you were going to run for office, you knew all that you were getting into. I never, ever, ever, ever once told a candidate a falsehood. I always said, listen, your wife or husband will hate you. Your kids will miss you. You will regret this. You will not raise as much money as you thought. You will not get as many votes as you thought. It's going to be tough.
Your professional career will probably suffer.
Right. But at the end of the day, there are many, many of these sacrifices, there are benefits that I can't even predict, that you'll see that you'll go, okay, that was worth it.
In the case of one of our co-hosts, you might get asked to join a award-winning libertarian podcast.
That's exactly right. So you don't,
not if they need an anarchist voice, right? They're not going to seek out
they probably wouldn't run for office.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If you need an anarchist voice, you're not going to choose a former politician,
right?
Yeah.
So you're going to sacrifice a little bit, but you're also going to find things that you didn't expect. You're going to find new really great friendships, new great partnerships. You know,
except for Joe. Our presence on Joe's life is probably a big negative.
I know. I'm sure Mickey really just rues the day that she ever fell in with us.
He probably was very comfortable in his Puerto Rican nationality, and then he met you, and then it became, oh, what is that, like Guatemalan but worse?
Yeah, who's the guy who in The Sopranos who ran Vesuvio's?
Oh, Artie
the chef.
Uh-huh.
Like, Joe's Artie the chef. And I can just tell that, like, Mickey's like, you got to get away from those guys. They're nothing but trouble for you. They're nothing but bad news. So, no. Anyways, I'm choking to death.
Being a candidate, to me, it's funny. If you can be a Republican, like, because a lot of the Republican candidates are placeholders, it seems like to me, in Indiana, just based on my interactions with some of them. Within the GOP is the closest thing to the Chinese Communist Party in the United States.
You know,
the Indiana GOP.
The bills are agreed upon on whether they'll pass or not before they're even introduced on the floor.
Same with the districts. I mean, in you know, 60% of the state house districts here go unchallenged. And so the Republicans and Democrats have an unspoken agreement that, hey, let's balance this out, and then we'll make it a safe Democrat district, and you make this a safe Republican district, and we'll make that a safe Democrat district. So that way you don't have to put resources in 100 different seats. They have to put resources into 5, 10, 15 seats.
They just sit around and wait for affairs.
Right. So they know that every 2 years, any given cycle, in the state house, for instance, here in Indiana, they're really only going to have 3 to 5 close races that they're going to need to throw a lot of resources at. And there's 100 seats that are up for election. So it's all kind of rigged from the beginning because we've let Coke and Pepsi write the antitrust laws.
Are you trying to tell me that when the politicians pick their voters, democracy is not at work?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Man.
Now, does that make it sound hopeless? You could take it that way, that's just the way that it is.
That's the way I take it.
It doesn't, but that doesn't mean that it's going to stay that way forever. And the more education that you can do, the more involvement that you can have in your local area, the more persuasion that you can have over your state house rep and get in their ears, you know, you can make a change. Because, again, these campaigns are small. You know, if you're a libertarian who isn't necessarily partial to the Libertarian Party, or you are in an area where there isn't a Libertarian Party, or but you want to be politically involved, you're not like Maya, who is like, politics is stupid, don't waste your time. But then again, I met Maya on campaigns. That's how Maya and I became friends, working on campaigns.
Didn't she win an award that was...
she won best volunteer of any campaign for the 2012 election cycle.
She it was voluntary.
That's true.
So I can't say it was like paid position.
Now, you know, get involved in some of these local races. Get involved in the issues that are taking place locally and befriend the guy who's probably going to win, the Democrat or the Republican or whatever. And volunteer for them a little bit. So, because if you put some time into it, money's fine, but it's not going to really get their ear. If you're in front of them and they see you work hard 10 hours a campaign cycle, then they're going to remember you when the next time they see you, and they're going to listen to you when you call them a little bit more. So am I the libertarian, the big L libertarian, saying volunteer for Republican or Democratic races? If it makes sense,
just volunteer. This is my opinion. Volunteer Democrat.
Yeah.
Republicans are racists, homophobes, big. I mean, that's what they're branded.
Coming from a Republican.
As a Republican. Like, so you're already at a disadvantage.
With all the
ever affiliate. If you ever affiliate with the Republican Party, even if you're in the most safe district on the planet, like Hendricks County in Indiana, they know where the Democrats live and they track them. Like, that is the most Republican county I've ever seen in district.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
Well, with the NSA, I may not be kidding. I'm not sure. But
they probably be.
Anyway, the point is, and I'm a Trojan horse fan. One, it's fun because you control.
And
you
this can man be doesn't have kids, so listen to him.
Yeah, exactly, right? So you can go, like, I tell Joe all the time, Joe, just be a Democrat. You'll be a triple threat. You are incredibly charismatic. You're joining all these councils, and congratulations, by the way. He was asked to join the Young Hispanics Leadership Council of South Bend.
Yes, he's now the vice president of Mexican Club. All right, I apologize. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
That was
Speaking of racist Republicans.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
I'm not
Can you believe he used to organize Iraq rallies in 2003?
Hey, mm-hmm. I am not a Republican. You take that back.
But anyway, so like, if I am going to offer any advice, run Democrat, get in a district that's a toss-up, act like a Republican like Joe Donnelly. You are Teflon, like Bill Clinton. Beloved by everyone. The guy's basically a Republican that decided to run Democrat in a southern state.
Yeah, if you look at Republicans all think they're libertarians, and then you're just going to spend your time alienating yourself arguing with them. So if you're in a heavily Democratic district, volunteer with the Democrats. Just jump in and see, meet the people and kind of know your enemy a little bit. Befriend them.
Look at Gina. Gina got 13% of the vote in a state senate race in Marion County as a libertarian with $184 budget.
Democrat.
And if she had run as a Democrat, she has enough libertarian leanings, because like Indiana Democrats still hate gays, but Gina's like a civil libertarian, so that's an improvement in my opinion as the state senate level.
Right.
Gina runs as a Democrat, going away. She kills the debates. She every libertarian dominates the debates.
We got a lot of blue dogs in this state. You know?
Oh, yeah. Joe Donnelly is a Republican in any other state in America, but in Indiana, you got to watch him because he shared his toys.
Now, for all those people who are listening who are getting mad, let me reiterate. My piece of advice, A, is different than Greg's.
Yeah.
Because if there is a local Libertarian Party, you should do what you can to grow that Libertarian Party, because an alternative party is needed. And the more robust your Libertarian Party is, because while you can volunteer, they'll still listen to you. But if you're the candidate running against them, and I've seen this time and time again, you know, Mike Pence stole ideas from Rupert. You know,
his whole campaign, it could be argued.
Right. There were a lot of things that Mike Pence adopted because of Rupert. There are a lot of things that I've seen local congressional candidates or local state house candidates. They seriously think about what our candidates are saying. And it influences them. And you see bills introduced by those people at certain points. You know, a guy like Rex Bell here in Indiana impresses everybody he runs against. Andy Horning, whenever Andy runs against someone, they're backstage at the debates, and they approach Andy and start picking his brain and talking to him because he's such a smart guy and he has a unique perspective. Most of the Republicans and Democrats that are ingrained in the system have heard one train of thought, one strain of thinking, their entire career, nay, their entire lives. So they are shocked and surprised and curious and interested when they meet a libertarian candidate like Andy, like Rupert, like Rex Bell, like Gary Johnson, who says, no, it could be different. It could be done this way. Here's how you need to think about it. Here's what you could offer. Hey, let me send you a white paper on this. Or I'd love to sit down with one of your staffers and go over it with them. Or do you have time for coffee? Maybe we can get together after the campaign and let's just, you know, I want to maintain a civil relationship. Now, not like, hey, you want to get coffee next week and meet? Wait until after the election, okay?
I'm friendly and shaven.
Right. what was the line?
Oh, man.
We'll have to go back and refer to it. I'm tired and you're high.
Yeah.
That's a joke. I'm just kidding.
I'm also tired.
But that is...
Well done.
And Greg's three beers deep.
No, two.
Although that's like a drop in the bucket for you.
That's a night off.
You have the tolerance of a rhinoceros.
I spent some time in the Republican Party.
Losing weight, though.
So, but my point is that...
Weight loss changes things a lot faster than you think.
That I maintain that the Libertarian Party is a very useful tool for achieving liberty and influencing the system. Now, if you're the type of person who thinks that running for office is a waste of time, that involving yourself in politics and government is a waste of time because you'll never achieve freedom by working within the system to destroy it, by being a part of the system, then more power to you. This has been a waste of time on you. But
Ron Swanson.
If you're trying to figure out where you fit in, we wanted to give you some ideas to chew on because you have to be honest and upfront and ask the right questions and understand that when you're running for office, you're making a promise to people. And, you know, this candidate in Indiana who he basically went and broke a promise to the Libertarian Party of Indiana, its delegates, the hardworking people of his district. And essentially, I'm not going to say he lied because I think circumstances changed. I don't think that he lied. I think that he thought that there was going to be far more support than there was because he didn't ask the right questions. Nobody lied to him.
He probably just found out that he couldn't use campaign funds for beer.
Oh, that's not nice. That's not besmirch.
I can tell you what I think happened.
Okay. What's your opinion?
You do not come and run as a Libertarian candidate if you are basically a constitutional conservative thinking that you know everything and you are so well-versed and so well-schooled in Republican thought and small government, limited government thought, because the GOP is full of a lot of know-nothings.
Right.
But you go to the Libertarian Party, every volunteer that works for you is going to probably have read Rothbard.
Right.
They know their stuff inside and out, and you're going to get beaten to death if you don't know every reason for your positioning. You do not come here thinking that, well, I can just make the Libertarian Party the Republic, like the principled Republican Party, because you're going to go down the rabbit hole speaking as a former Republican that thought they knew things. And you are going to actually arrive at the libertarian position because you're wrong and because you don't know anything.
Well, I mean, the big thing is you got these two parties, Democrat and Republican, and they're used to having a platform checklist rather than a core founding principle.
Sure.
While libertarians, small libertarians, have two guiding principles, non-aggression principle and the principle of self-ownership. And from that, you could actually derive all the platform points you need. And that's one of the reasons why you were discussing Andy Horning coaching all these Republicans before the debates, is because the Republicans, once they have their checkpoint, it's hard to deviate from that.
Sure.
Because it's not based off of principles. If you're asked on an issue you're unfamiliar with, it could be anywhere.
Yeah.
And if you say it once, it's online forever, and it's going to be brought up at your next election cycle. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, so if you're gonna make a commitment to run for office, keep your commitment, even if it's not everything you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying principle is the most important part of running a campaign.
Sure.
With that.
But that's not something... I mean, that's...
Don't expect the minority party to fawn all over you like you're some big savior, because you're somewhere between George W. Bush and Justin Amash.
This person was begging to be interviewed by We Are Libertarians at one point, and Joe spent 5 minutes talking to this person, and it was very clear that he, let's say, holds an unorthodox position in regards to gay marriage within libertarian circles, which became a sticking point later in his campaign, which, honestly, that's on the Libertarian Party of Indiana, because it took Joe 5 minutes to figure it out. Why did nobody at the convention or before that vet this guy and figure that out? Because that's like, if you're not for the freedom of two individuals to make a decision, it doesn't even matter if you're, we're not even arguing there should be no government and marriage versus marriage equality for everybody, equal protection under the law currently. We're saying this person just flat out doesn't want two gay people to get married because he thinks it's icky and it's against his religion.
Because the guy in the sky told me this and wrote it in a book, and that's what we should follow as law.
So that's a fundamental misunderstanding of libertarian principles, that two individuals know what's better than what this person knows or what the government says. You know, so that's sometimes sometimes parties both – heck, John McCain didn't get it right when he picked vice president, so you can't expect a team of volunteers – at the local level to pick congressional candidates right every time.
In hindsight, having someone watching Russia at all times might have been beneficial to the country, because Putin was able to take Ukraine. And just think if Sarah had sat on her back patio, we might not be in that situation.
So I'm not going to fault him too much, because I've been in the position of vetting candidates. I've had these disasters go down where you've got candidates quit and you've got egg on your face. But, you know, if you're going to make a promise, know what you're getting into. And if you're out there listening and you want to get involved, just get involved. Don't sit there and look for the magical formula or the best way or whatever. Just go online, read their website. People that listen to this podcast are smart enough to read between the lines, to go to a website and tell that it's genuine thought. If you go to Andy Horning's website and you read what he says, if you go to Gary Johnson's website and read what he says, it's very clear that they understand that they believe what you believe. If you go to Todd Young, Todd Young or Andre Carson, who are two congresspeople, one a Republican, one a Democrat here in Indiana, it's very clear that they are feeding you a line of bullcrap and they're never going to listen to you and they don't care what you think, you know, or that they are towing the party lines. So it's just blatantly obvious. People in this audience are smart enough to discern that. So find the candidate by doing a little bit of research, 5 minutes of research, find a candidate, and just show up and volunteer for them. Get to know them and help them out. Because then if more people had done that with this person, now this person, I think, has their own issues, and it probably would have ended up this way anyways. But let's say that more people had stepped up to volunteer. That the 5 people or the 10 people or the 15 people that he were promised would help volunteer in his campaign showed up, maybe we'd have a different outcome. So you've got to not only put it on party leadership, on this person mainly, but also individuals in that area who could have stepped up and worked a little bit harder.
I blame Joe, because this would have never happened if Joe had just run.
Hey, you know what? You're right. Because this is the district that Joe ran in last time.
And killed it.
And Joe lives there. Joe could have volunteered.
Joe could have won.
Right.
Now, by Joe, you mean Ruiz, right?
That's right. Joe Ruiz. Ruiz. Look him up.
Is that Puerto Rican or Mexican?
Oh, it's indiscriminate, indeterminable.
Just Latin.
Right, Latin.
So One question I have, though, is how come everybody's so surprised when somebody with political aspirations fails an entire large group of people?
Or, exactly. Or when a person wanting to run for office is actually a giant egomaniac.
See, you miss out on all these problems when you just assume that everyone in government is out there to screw you.
Right.
If you'd assume that, you wouldn't be in this mess.
So, Greg, what has been my point? I feel like I've just rambled and vented here a little.
Your point is this. Is first, you have to discern whether you want to commit to the process of political change. If you do, that is not for the weak of constitution. It is...
Running for office, whether it's a township race or for president of the United States, and every position in between, is a significant part-time job, if not full-time job. No matter what party you're in. Period. If you put your name on the ballot and you're serious about running for office, and if you're a paper candidate, which I am not crazy about because I think that's just kind of
it's fool's gold,
right? A paper candidate is somebody who just puts their name on the ballot, so there's an option for libertarian voters in that district to vote for them, but they never do anything, remotely campaign-wise. They don't raise money. They don't actively engage with the media, with voters. And I generally have found that paper candidates harm us as much as they help us, if not more, because the media can't get a headshot from them. The media can't get a survey return from them. They report bad things about the paper candidate and how lazy they are. Then they go in front of the election commission, and then because they forgot to file their paperwork, and they get yelled at. Voters try and email them or get a phone call from them, and they don't, and then word spreads mouth to mouth that this person isn't serious about running, and so all libertarians aren't serious about running. So I personally don't like the concept of paper candidates. I wish that practice, but Republicans and Democrats do it too. 60% of those people that are unchallenged in the Indiana House have a candidate. It's just that candidate's not really running against him, or they're not a serious candidate.
And you will be way more effective doing that because you can go and have... there are enough Democrats and Republicans you can fool with original thought that they'll be like, oh, they won't sniff you out. But if you come to the Libertarian Party and come in with, well, I'm a small government conservative, so I'll just run as a Libertarian... Oh my gosh, you might as well say, please troll me.
Yeah.
Please ruin my social media life, because that's what's going to happen.
Oh, please tell the internet what I just said.
Yes. And actually, the other thing, too, is this individual that we're speaking of, I would have never gotten involved at all, because you know how I feel about local politics.
Sure.
He took a shot at We Are Libertarians, and he talked... Edit that out.
Hey, whatever.
It's an explicit show now.
No, he talked poorly.
Use your shitty fucking language.
He talked poorly about two good friends. And so that was the only reason I went on the offensive. And I think Spangle can say that I'm a pretty terrible enemy.
You're ruthless.
Because I'm soulless. I do not care about repercussions. And I hope to... Because I don't take anything personally, so I can't wait to stoke the flames of the fire.
Right.
I'm just picturing I'm soulless, I'm ruthless... And I'm out of practice, so that's why I'm a bad enemy.
I can't wait to sharpen the saw.
And two senses.
Right. But, and you know Photoshop now.
Oh, that makes me dangerous.
I know.
I can't wait to spread some rumors about South Bend and watch the Whispering Eye fall.
The Whispering Eye.
Oh, is that not what it's called?
The Whispering Eye.
Have you ever seen the movie Role Models?
Yeah. Tell her you like your Whispering Eye.
Oh, I thought that was the name of the show.
Whispering Eye.
Yeah, the one with the logo that was done by like Dreamweaver or Front Page.
Yeah, the poor
attempt. We'll just call it Whispering Eye from now on.
The poor attempt to copy us.
Yeah.
Which, fine. Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
So. You can be a bad candidate all day. I don't care.
Right.
But just if you ever take a shot at anybody, one of my castmates, your life's over.
Right.
And you're going to be convicted of child porn charges very quickly.
Oh, hey.
Oh, wow.
Somebody very close to you. Took a shot at me yesterday.
That was by me.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to have you run her.
No, I influenced that to an extent.
I was too tired to fight back. I just laid there and took it. So I was like, just kick me. I'm down. All right. So, listen, if you run for office, keep your word. Be honest. And if you are going to quit, do it with class. Don't be a no-class hack.
Don't bother trying to say, be honest, to potential political candidates. If that worked, we wouldn't be in this situation right. in the first place.
Know what you're getting into before you get into it, because politics and running for office is not like going to a church group where you can quit, or going to a volunteer meetings every Thursday night, and then eventually you just stop going because you just don't want to do it. Like, if you run for office, it's serious. You're making a commitment to voters. You're making a commitment to society. And I know, Maya, F society. But, you know, it just really bothered me. And then to go back and say, screw you guys, you didn't do exactly what I wanted, so I'm going to throw a big fit and take you all to task. And instead of going, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, I'm sorry, I regret this, I apologize to the people I've let down, but I've got to do something different. You go out and you do, you know, it shows an immaturity that libertarians of all stripes, of all parties, you know what, I'm not even going to place that on libertarians. That's just human beings in general. We're all yep. immature. Listen to this podcast for 5 minutes. You'll realize how immature humans are.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, I think that segues nicely because we were going to discuss the role of social media yeah. in today. And what happened was, in this individual's backing out, quitting, going galt, however you decide to say it, he was disappointed that all of a sudden everyone knew, everyone had an opinion, and they descended upon him, which will happen because...
Well, this individual is very confused that people didn't congratulate him for his righteous stand against the evilness of people not volunteering for his campaign and not donating more than, like, $10. When, dude, it's called leadership. If your team fails, if you fail to gather donations and volunteers, it's because you failed as a leader, right?
It's called being part of the... liberty movement. You're right. Not going to get volunteers or money.
Don't we know it? So continue, Greg.
Well, no, I mean, that was the whole point, is that he did some very public displays of condemning, mocking, and tearing down the very party and platform that was willing to take him on and promote him and help him succeed. So what did he do when it didn't look like he could actually have the waywos to recruit anybody, to have anyone help him, to have people contribute money, to have anyone support his positions? What did he do? He blamed the institution for its shortcomings, non-existent shortcomings. And that, to me, is he's basically a Democrat because he likes to blame other people for his problems. And he wants us to subsidize his inadequacy. And that's not going to happen, yeah, which... Right. I don't even care, because I don't care about you cutting up your party card, you doing all these dumb things, but I know Joe Ruiz, I know the campaign manager of this individual's, I guess you could call it campaign. Is it really a campaign if it never got started?
It depends on if the paperwork responds.
And they're all stand-up guys, incredibly intelligent, and the fact of the matter is, you have unprincipled positions, and that's why no one wanted to support you, and hence the payoff in South Bend, I'll call it.
Right.
See, this is
the
why...
The payoff in South Bend, what do you mean by that?
There are just rumors floating around the interwebs.
Okay, here we go.
Bernadette's blog said...
the rumors being spread by Greg Lenz are not the opinions of those of Dan Peffers, Chris Spangle, or this network.
You know they're in ink, but it's still... I mean, it's basically like .wordpress.geocities.prodigy.net. But
/angelfire.
There are just some rumors being floated around that make it seem convenient for the Whispering Eyes ascent.
Well, that here's a guy who is a hardcore... talks like a hardcore Tea Partier, who's running against the beloved Tea Party champion, Jackie Walorski, who lost 3 years ago because of the Libertarian candidate, so she says, and then she wants to neutralize that threat this time, so she runs a Libertarian candidate that ends up quitting. That's a vicious rumor, Greg. You should stop spreading that.
No, but if I were Dan Drexler, and Dan, you know I think you're a great guy, so I hope you see this as the trolling that I so would love if you listen. Please go to Walorski's campaign and please stage a debate a Republican Libertarian debate in South Bend with your candidate versus hers. And let's just have, you remember the Republican camp, Clint Eastwood thing? Let's do this for Jackie LaWardowski.
The chair.
Yeah. That's what it'll look like.
The debate that nobody showed up to.
Exactly. And then you'll get a little bit of redemption.
All right. Well, that's enough. Again, you know, people make commitments. They should keep their commitments. Period.
Yes.
And we don't have room for blatant rumors and innuendos, Greg. Okay? Thank you.
Hey, I read it on Reddit.
Then it's got to be true.
But so social media clearly is effective in dominating message nowadays.
Sure.
Narrative can be hijacked in almost instantaneously, wouldn't you say?
Completely. I mean, it's, you know, if you quit a few years ago, party insiders via the phone tree would know about it. You quit now, it turns into, a 100-comment thread, which broadcasts out to their Facebook friends, and it multiplies infinitely, and then you end up on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page being mocked, and then that spreads to tens of people.
You really see a boost in Google searches when it hits We Are Libertarians.
Now, it's not necessarily earth-shattering in terms of traffic. Like, if you take this situation in particular, it's not a ton of eyeballs, but it's certainly well multiplied beyond what it would have been 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even. So if a candidate does something silly, then you get Republicans jumping on going, oh, look, libertarians attacking other libertarians. Isn't this what you say about us? That Republicans just hate other Republicans. And there's too much infighting, blah, 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 blah.
That's not our only problem with Republicans.
Sure. And then it becomes a PR issue.
And you can't have a group of anarchists without infighting.
Sure.
That's just how it happens.
But the other parties, every party has it. Every group of political ideology. I mean, there's like
they just don't know what they're talking about.
Right now, somewhere out there, there is the Rabbit Socialist Party of Northern Idaho. And the four people in there are having a horrible disagreement about Red versus Yukon, okay? I mean, it's
Big Spud versus Small Spud.
Right. Every time you get more than two people together, there's going to be an argument. Every time you get more than one hey, I'm by myself and I have arguments all the time, so.
You know, I have to disagree with you.
Shut up. So, you know, one place, don't high-five him. That
I'm
only
sorry, that was
that, behavior.
That was perfect. That was perfect.
He's only funny when he's not trying, okay? That's a joke. I'm kidding.
I love no, you're not.
So the Israeli-Palestinian fight right now. Israel has people always, let's stand with Israel, let's stand with Israel, let's stand with Israel. Every time there was an attack, you know, as I paid attention to politics for my first 30 years, up until the last 5 years, it's been stand with Israel, stand with Israel, stand with Israel. With every sort of skirmish over the last 5 years, kind of culminating with this last, let's call it skirmish, it is becoming increasingly popular to look at Israel's actions negatively, especially amongst libertarian circles. Now, I'm not saying that I'm pro-Israel or pro-Palestine because, frankly, both do things that... Do I think that Israel has a right to exist? Yes. Do I think that the Israelis oppress and do terrible things to the Palestinians? Absolutely. I don't think either side is right. I don't think either side is totally wrong. But it's nothing that we're going to solve on this podcast, because if John Kerry can't solve it, then we certainly won't be able to.
Now, when you say that Israel has the right to exist, do you mean that the people are allowed to be alive? Or do you mean that the state should have the authority to that specific land that was portioned out at the end of World War II?
Are we okay? That's a good thought for questioners to think about in their own mind as we advance this topic, because I don't know the answer to your question.
And we actually covered that in the last podcast. It'll be out tonight.
It'll be out when this one goes out. They'll go out
simultaneously. Okay,
tomorrow. So
gotcha.
I'm going to edit and get it done. But yes, I know that Truman and the State of Israel were created And like every other nation on the planet, we're created by a group of rich white men.
Well, I mean, it's not specifically Israel I'm talking about, though. You're talking about a state having right to land in general.
That's, sure.
And that's something that I don't agree with at all. I don't think any I don't think a state has the right to own property.
But here's the destination versus rule. I understand your point, but here's the direction versus destination libertarian.
No. We're talking about principle here. We're not talking
principle versus pragmatic. Because we could talk about the way that it should be, or we can talk about the way that the situation currently exists.
No, we're talking about what is going on. That's completely different. I'm not pushing a particular agenda. I'm just wondering what it is you mean by, you know, Israel having a right to exist. Do you mean that the Hebrew people, the Hebrew nation as a people can exist? Because I agree with you there, but I mean, I think a lot of our strife comes from the fact that we want to make sure that a small strip of land in the Mediterranean belongs under control of certain people, and that seems very problematic to me. That seems, and when the debate is framed on that,
sure,
it causes a smokescreen. We don't, and that's one of the things that social media is doing, is we're actually seeing for the first time people posting pictures of their home, of their family, of loved ones who are being hurt by what's going on. And so now you've got to think, like, well, I have a Twitter account too. I mean, am I potentially some person on Twitter posting pictures of his ruined house someday? Or
yeah, no, I think, and that's a fair point that you bring up, Dan. Previously, I mean, I was always very pro-Israel, very, you know, being a Christian, they've got all this land belongs to them because God said so. But so anytime anybody says anything negative about Israel, you go, hey there, stop that. That's that blah, 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 rabble, rabble. But once I started watching documentaries about the conflict and seeing, there's one Netflix documentary that I watched that it was about the building of the wall in Israel. And it, What basically happened, there's this generations old, I mean, thousands of years old olive farm, essentially. And this entire town depended on this small olive farm, and they made olive oil and canned olives, and this was the income for the town. And the Israeli government came through and built the wall right through the middle of this historic olive farm, and basically destroyed the income from the town. And then on top of that, they can't get over to the other side of the wall to work. So they basically just ruined this entire town of Palestinians, they're now destitute. And the town is like 50% young male. So do the math. Yeah. You know, what do you think is going to end up happening?
Well,
so,
there's going to be some recruiting posters.
Sure. So there's,
I assume.
Yeah. So it is perfect. It's fertile ground for what we talked about in the previous episode with ISIS, with Hamas, with some of these terror recruiting groups, because you're watching this entire town. These young men are watching their aunts, their uncles who are elderly, their families, their loved ones, having everything that they own destroyed. And so what that documentary did for me, it showed me the human side of something that I'd always heard about, but I'd never really put in human terms.
It was conceptual.
Sure. It was conceptual. It was just lines on a map. And then that made it real. And what social media is doing now is it's making war real. It's making, you know, it's not a romanticized version like Saving Private Ryan.
No more bans on fallen soldiers coming home by the government.
Right. You're now seeing the 1,800 Palestinians that have been killed. You know, you're seeing pictures of the children that died. You're seeing pictures of the schools being torched on both sides. And yeah, Hamas is using that to their advantage. And that's where sort of the outcry is taking place, is Netanyahu had the line last week, I think it was, we use our bombs to protect our schools, they use their schools
to protect their bombs.
Yeah, basically what they said is we use our bombs to protect our children, and they use their children to protect their bombs. you know, and some of that can be staged.
Well, why don't you poison the well on that debate with that statement?
Well, but he's, you know, he's the head of one of the warring states. What do you expect him to do? Mm, you know, yeah. Come out and say, you know, I think we've done some wrong. I think we've done some bad things. That's not how it works, Dan. You know that.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, I made that point earlier about politicians.
Nothing that even if you abolished the state, even when there was no state, if you read the Old Testament, there were warring factions within this region. You know, it may not be that like that in Indiana, but for whatever reason, this region's warring all the time. But
there were Native Americans in this area at that time.
Right. So
there were warring factions.
Not at that time.
Too.
So social media also stopped our involvement in Syria. I don't think that I think we'd have troops on the ground in the Syria area by this point. Had we not had social media, I think that at a certain point we would have been pulled into that engagement to the point that there would have been serious consideration, if not actual troops, in some capacity. Not a full scale Iraq invasion, but definitely
it would have been at
advisors,
least a Granada
advisors, something like that. Yeah, exactly.
For what? That's for Syria. Way too down the line, you know.
Yeah, but. What happens is the public opinion, you start hitting CNN, you start hitting the hosts, you start hitting the bloggers, you start hitting everybody, this is outrageous, why are we doing this? They see the pissed off people in their timeline. And so the opinion makers start thinking, oh, public opinion must be against this, and that becomes the story. It's just like the story today that we post on our Weird Libertarians. It was about on Gawker about how... police brutality becomes a national crisis, and everybody, a couple people chimed in and was like, oh, well, they're just talking about police on black crime, which, A, let's not miss the point that police on any color of skin crime is bad. Okay, any violence perpetrated against an individual by another individual is bad, even if it's a police officer against a citizen. Secondly, Gawker is one of the sites that the media reads, and that sets their agenda, and that's where they get their news, and so it advances the conversation forward.
Well, with what you just said, I just kind of pictured CNN looking at their Facebook feed, and like, all right, what's at the top of this hour?
Right. I mean, speaking of police brutality,
what's Russia today
have you guys not noticed in your news feed the amount of police brutality posts? I don't think it's just my friends and my circles, because I see more of my high school friends than I used to. I see more babies being born than I see politics anymore. And then all of a sudden, like the last month or two, it's just been nothing but choose your locale, police officer beats up woman, police officer maces man in face, you know.
But that's in your Facebook news feed,
never
right?
Punished,
right.
Or suspended without pay for a few weeks, right. Or something like
so
that.
So this brings up like an even more important issue. Is why do you think you're seeing that more and more? Is it because of the nature of the occurrence, or is it because of an algorithm that detects what you like and what you're interested in?
See, now, yes, but I'm not going to say I could care less about police brutality, but I'm not like Maya. I'm not part of Cop Block.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not something that if I see those stories, I click on them, that would bump that up in my algorithm.
Yeah.
It's like people are sharing that, I think, more frequently.
But they know you're a libertarian.
Right.
Without a doubt. And they probably, based on the intelligence they have, could deduce what your opinion would be.
Sure.
And so, given...
If you haven't put it explicitly in your profile already.
So, is that an issue?
My profile under political belief says, fuck the police. So, maybe you're onto something.
Oh, well then... So, you're one of those moderates.
Right. That's a joke, everybody. Yeah. Everybody calm down.
He's one of those... what do they call him? The silent majority.
Right.
But no, that's something I think that's even more interesting. Like, because Gaza... The Hamas is winning. Right now, there has never been more sentiment for support for the recognition of a Palestinian state by the world major powers than any time in history.
Right.
When the world major powers, in fact, created this situation by winning World War II and placing them there.
Right.
And banning Palestinians any rights as far as the right to return. So Israel has, at their birth, was founded on the idea of self-preservation because they knew they were being put in a place where every day they were probably... They weren't welcome.
Sure.
They weren't necessarily under duress like the media would have you believe, but they absolutely weren't welcomed being placed there. Because their rightful claim is a biblical document.
Right.
And so the other individuals that have been living there, like these people with the olive grove, government made it possible for that to happen.
Sure. That land was homesteaded.
It was homesteaded. I mean,
and so it was their property, and then another government just came in and decided to take their property.
Because, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's never happened before. Sure. Governments coming in right. and stealing your property?
Exactly.
Because if we're going to go, like, you know, if homesteading is the principle we're going by, then the Canaanites should kick everybody out.
Right.
You know, that's, and if that's
still,
the, doc, yeah.
If they were still alive.
Exactly. Well, that's, it's funny. They think there's traces, the Palestinians.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not really. Exactly.
Yeah, like, so
really
that's the absurdity. That's the absurdity.
I'm getting tested for Sumerian blood, and then I can settle wherever the hell
exactly,
I want.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So, like, that's how it's what do they call that? Reduction absurdum?
Ad absurdum.
So that's the point where we're at. And so that's what we use that as a basis when that is no benchmark whatsoever or no foundation to build something on. In order to allow the return of the Jewish people and to set up a state. And slowly but surely, people that have been living there for thousands of years, hundreds of years, were displaced. All of a sudden, they were granted second-class rights. All of a sudden, they started building walls through olive groves. Who, if anyone who's read the Old Testament, knows that walled towns don't have a great fate in the Old Testament.
Right.
So, what we need is the absence of government there almost to an extreme extent. And instead what we get is two warring tribes. And Hamas is very much an organization that exists. I mean, it's in their founding documents, and we can link to it if you want it, to drive Israel off the map. Israel exists to fulfill an Old Testament prophecy.
Right.
They're almost relying on each other because Hamas is not set up to be a political organization for ruling. They're set up for, they're almost an expiring contract. They accomplish their, or they're a free agent, or a contractor. They accomplish their goal and they're gone. Then Fatah party steps in. Right now, they're trying to merge, and it's been years of this, and it's never going to go away. And yet, you have the Israelis on one side. They have an Operation Defend the Fence, or Operation Defend, whatever this offensive that's going on right now has a name. It's branded. It's got a social media name.
Right.
On the Gaza side, they have the same thing. The Muslim individuals who think they are being transgressed against by the Israeli government, like ISIS, like Hamas, they essentially have social media specialists.
Right.
And right now, the Hamas and ISIS are winning. They're doing it better. Their hashtags are getting more retweets. They're getting more graphic pictures in front of people who don't have an opinion. They're swaying public opinion.
Little old Greg Lenz in Plainfield, Indiana, or wherever you were sitting, was able to talk to a representative of ISIS.
Yep.
Try and get some hold of someone from the United States federal government. Try and get a hold of somebody from the White House on Twitter. Good luck, but you're talking to a terrorist organization.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know if you're gonna use this for the purposes of propaganda, like Twitter. Then I'm not. I mean, for me, it was an issue of I'm pretty. Oh, you know, it's probably a mean thing to do, but I was like, I'm pretty sure I can get this guy to admit he's wrong. You know, that's probably not the smartest thing to do with a jihadist, but
you know, try and rationalize with a jihadist.
Well, like, no, it wasn't that. As I was only, I was never going to give him my position. I was just going to ask him questions, and then as soon as he got to the point of like, oh crap, he quit and shut his account down.
Let me ask you a question.
Huh?
How's that worked out with Maya?
I've never used the questions on Maya.
Social terrorist supreme.
No, although I out-voluntaried a voluntarist. This discussion this morning.
Yeah,
I saw that. What's the story?
Well, so Maya is the queen of blocking people on Facebook.
Right.
So she will block you, and it's almost like a power that you are no longer in her consciousness. So I preempted her. I did it. I guess you could say I Bush doctrined her of social media by blocking her before she could block me. And So right now, Spangle's like, hey, you know, hey, I love the picture. Why don't you and Maya friends? I'm like, oh, no, I'm not giving this up. I have the upper hand forever.
On Maya.
She has been out-voluntaried by a scumbag neocon Republican that likes to call himself a libertarian. And I said to Spangle, I go, tell the people of Keene I prefer limestone statues to copper.
You really did. You brought freedom to her Facebook page.
I sometimes have to liberate even the voluntarists among us.
Didn't she say she was going to Slab City?
Oh, who knows?
A while
There's
back.
Always she's going to Costa Rica this week. She's going to Guatemala the
okay,
next. Who
she's
knows?
One of those.
Is she going to see Joe?
It took me a minute. I had to kick in the Greg Lynn / racist part
Whoa.
Of my brain to figure that out.
Whoa, anyway, no. But wouldn't you say it's pretty shocking how quickly public sentiment has turned on the support of Hamas, who the State Department calls a terrorist organization?
Absolutely.
When it's already been known that the British government has a social media, essentially control tool. They can influence online polling. They can influence what you see. Glenn Greenwald reported all of this. And so even social media is still filtered through the government.
Okay. Well, one quick thing along the lines of social media I want to ask is, what do you guys think about Russia's attempts to de-anonymize Tor? Are you guys familiar with Tor?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Wow. That's if you search for Tor, the NSA's now, that's how they're identifying people to track. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I just Shocking. Assumed I've been tracked.
Yeah. Well, you know libertarians.
I've got quite a history that has, I mean, everything I've done is pretty legitimate, you know. I have explosives training, but that is through the U.S. government, not through any rogue entity. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing that a government agency likes to look up on from time to time, just to make sure that the knowledge they gave me is in a safe home.
Right.
And not moving out.
Not anything. A friendly and shaven home. I'm sorry, I just thought that was so funny.
A friendly. I got to remember what that was.
But don't you think it's even, like, so right now us talking about the, like, what you originally asked me was, should we talk about, is war possible with social media?
Wait. I asked a question now. What do you guys think about about Russia's attempt to de-anonymize the Tor network? They're offering a reward, actually.
I think it's inevitable.
You think it will?
I think that it's a big full load of crap. There's no way that Putin is going to. There's got to be some sort of backup.
Putin isn't doing it himself. It's
Russians.
One would expect that he would hire people to do this for him.
That's what I'm saying. If Putin,
that's the reward.
If Putin says that he is pro freedom. There's a back door in there somewhere that is going to make sure that he's monitoring everything you do.
You know, speaking of social media, I've always felt that Vladimir Putin, his biggest problem is he wants people to respect him. And that's why he acts out the way he does. That's why he makes these jungle cats attack journalists, and he saves them heroically in front of news cameras and whatnot. You
right.
guys heard about that, right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
But, I mean, I think he just needs a hug. I think we should start hashtag hugging in effigy.
He should be more like Greg Lynn's. Make sure that nobody respects
but
him.
I think we
exactly.
Just don't care.
But I think we should start hashtag hugging in effigy, and where everybody makes effigies of Vladimir Putin and gives him a hug on camera.
Aww.
And just tell him, you know what, Mr. Putin, you don't need to invade Crimea. You already have our love. You don't need to try to prove your value to us.
I mean, ultimately, Vladimir Putin has a thirst for greatness.
I think it's more the perception of greatness he wants more than just actual greatness.
You think so?
Well, I mean, he's already in charge of Russia. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, his entire life, even as, because he has a PhD, has been.
I mean, he's pretty much on the top of the world, though. I mean,
oh no,
Russia,
he wants to rebuild. Like his PhD is on creating. Is about the combination of the state and capitalism in order to form what's called these economic superhouses. and where you take strategic interests of the state, like oil, gas, infrastructure, and you rebuild a super state based on state capitalism versus like free market capitalism. And so, like, to me, since he was eight, you know, or 24 years old, he's been planning on restoring Russia and dreaming of, I mean, he's wanted to be the Russian Tony Stark since he was 24 years old. And his success has only probably added to his delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, I just think, honestly, I think that a lot of Putin's behavior, though, can be explained by how, by being insecure. If he was an insecure person who was constantly seeking others' approval, it would make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, let's swing back around back to war and social media, because Ukraine certainly plays a huge part in this. I mean, there is a story on some news site, I think it was the Atlantic Wire, about a Russian pilot, not a pilot, he manned the surface-to-air missiles for Russia, and he kept Instagramming pictures of himself inside the tank or the armored carrier that carried the surface-to-air
Buk missile.
Yeah, the Buk missile. And it gave away his location, and it was pretty clear that it is very possible that the Russian military could have brought down that jetliner based on this one guy's Instagram. And I just thought...
Hashtag Latergram.
Right, yeah. So I just thought, wow, war has totally changed. Here's this self-absorbed guy who doesn't think, you know, oh, I shouldn't put this up on Instagram. You know, you would never... I mean, soldiers do stupid stuff. I'm sure, you know, that in World War II, the greatest generation, so-called greatest generation, soldiers did stuff that gave away positions because they weren't thinking. But this is broadcast around the world with tens of thousands of likes and comments and retweets, and he's like an internet celebrity. And that was the first thought. And then the second thought came today as I just kind of looked through some of these photos from Palestine when I was actually doing show prep for today. And I just thought, gosh, this has totally changed the way that we, the public, react to war. Public opinion about others' wars, and then public opinion about our own. And, you know, I think Iraq, and it would have, you know, you don't see a lot of American soldiers doing this kind of stuff in the theater. They must have, you've been in the military, Dan. Are there rules against cell phone usage? And I know it's probably haven't been in since there were smartphones, but.
Well, smartphones were just starting. Cell phones were a big deal for secure environments. They obviously don't want you to have a cell phone in a secure environment. But
there's probably not much of a cell signal in, you know, some pile of dirt in the middle of Iraq or Afghanistan.
Actually, there's a surprising amount of cell signal, especially in rural countries like that.
Hmm.
Africa, there's several countries that their cell tower, their terrestrial tower system is just growing exponentially.
Hmm.
But Afghanistan and Iraq, the thing is, when the Americans move in to bomb everything, they still need to eat, they still are making money, and they still got to spend it on stuff that they want. So a lot of people from Iraq and Afghanistan have taken this opportunity to sell stuff to Americans for good old-fashioned American currency. And, you know, you've got all sorts of contractors who really want to put up cell phone towers, want to put in Wi-Fi hotspots. They want to go on these forward operating bases and open Starbucks franchises and Dunkin' Donuts and do whatever they can. And ultimately...
Export freedom.
Yeah. Basically, the
and
idea
diabetes.
Behind... Yeah, and diabetes. But these forward operating bases, you know, they're just... All they are is they end up being towns with walls, and people still want to sell them stuff. And so basically the amount of infrastructure has to do a lot with the available demand versus how long it's taken to actually meet this demand. But, I mean...
The danger is what we're actually seeing right now is we build out an infrastructure. We announce when we're leaving a group of individuals bent on statehood see an existing infrastructure that's about to be abandoned, ripe for takeover, and supplant, and their leader drives around in your Humvee and calls people on your cell tower you built.
I'm a little curious. Has anybody even read the Iraqi Constitution or anything?
Oh yeah, why?
I haven't
really?
Read it.
Oh yeah,
you have?
Oh yeah,
I figured if anybody,
you're not a virgin.
it just seems to me that, like, I haven't read it, but I've heard a lot of things about how when we nation build, these constitutions end up with a lot of experimental things that we would like to incorporate into our own country's
laws. Oh yeah. Well, we send in constitutional scholars, and like we even do it in Central American countries, who, like Honduras, have talked about privatizing their entire government.
But I mean, the big problem with that is, though, is that's going to serve special interests, because it is government electing a council to create this constitution. So I mean, of course, as soon as all the government officials leave, then there's going to be a huge effort to overthrow this, because it's probably going to be chock full of special interest sweethearts and whatnot.
Well, I mean, the entire situation they assumed was ginned up. It was astroturf. We went in, quasi-liberated them. All of a sudden, we send in constitutional scholars to help them decide whether they should form a Republican system of government or a parliamentarian system of government.
Educate them
on the differences. Pick our guy, al-Maliki, who is supported by the Iranian guard because he's a Shia, but Sunnis can tolerate him, so we handpick him. Shockingly, he starts slaughtering Sunnis when his re-election doesn't look concrete. And then you get the disintegration of a falsely generated state. So, I mean, it's thinking we know best. It is so being societal engineers, and here's how you form a constitution, because we did it. So you need to learn about it from
us.
Here's
how you engineer a constitution is more what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Because we have a fully functioning government. Let us export our system of government to you.
Yes. Now, granted, we have the longest living document that isn't followed, but it's still around, I guess.
Meanwhile,
yeah, but I mean,
occupy space in a museum somewhere.
But. Yeah,
all right. Final thoughts on this before I make a snarky comment about immigration.
On the social media, I have a big. I think it's really interesting. I think it's telling, but I have a really big issue, because at the end of the day, the internet was built by the federal government. DARPANET was the first generation of the internet.
If the government didn't do it, no one would have thought to link two computers together.
No, but I mean, like, that's the thing is fashion. That's the thing is, like, so Tor, so any existing technology you use, even Bitcoin, that blockchain technology or algorithm, any of those things are eventually not going to be anonymous any longer, because the federal government has a vested interest in finding out who you are, how you're spending your money, and what you're doing online. You are, without a doubt, subject to tracking, because you are a citizen of whatever government you belong to. So what I would recommend on social media is, you're never going to find absolute truth. Is Israel a terrorist organization for killing children in Gaza? Debatable. Is Hamas a terrorist organization for wanting to wipe the Israelis or push the Israelis into the sea? That's debatable, too. The end of the day, it's about you. You have to read it from both sides. You have to collect the information as much as you can, no matter how much it's been filtered or how much it's been put in front of you. And you have to form a critically thought-through argument, and you have to look at your moral code, and that's the only time you're ever going to know what you're talking about, because the rest of it, you're purely a puppet of propaganda by one side or the other.
Well, I'll be damned. Greg and I agree on something.
Oh, my.
Now, there's a little bit of inconsistency as far as principles involved. I don't think that de-anonymization is necessarily inevitable in any government scenario. But
no, just as if the creation of it was by government, they're probably going to have a way to track you down, like the internet.
That's kind of a false corollary, I think. But I digress. I do think Tor will be, I know for a fact Tor will be de-anonymized here.
I think it already
soon.
Is.
Soon. I'm the only reason I'm not saying it already has been is because technically we can't confirm that. But to all our listeners who use Tor, be very, very careful, because there's a very good chance that the service is not anonymous anymore. And we know for a fact it will not be for forever. That, I mean, we could, I'm thinking we'll probably figure out a way to replace this or to use existing infrastructure to maintain our anonymity, but it's going to take a lot more than Tor and Bitcoin nowadays.
So let's touch briefly on the CIA, because I don't think that this comes to a shock to anyone in this audience.
So all our listeners at the CIA just want to give a shout out.
Sup?
Holla. Yo, bro.
Holla. So I don't know why I said holla. But anyway, so a few months back, and we talked about it on the podcast, because we all know you listen to every minute of every episode, and have spent this time that we've been sketchy going through the back catalog to get caught up. Now, Dianne Feinstein, when all the Snowden leaks came out, was one of the most ardent supporters of the police state, of the NSA, of the CIA, of surveillance. I believe she's on the Intelligence Committee, and was one of the people out in front saying, you know, no, this is necessary. You know, I'm a liberal, progressive Democrat who believes that nothing improper is taking place here. Everything's good. And then, like, 6 months ago, she comes out and says, I no longer feel that way. I have evidence that the CIA has been spying on the Senate Foreign Intelligence Committee. Is it the Foreign Intelligence or I thought it was Foreign Intelligence, but
surveillance?
Yeah, but essentially they have been spying on the committee that oversees the CIA. And
the FISA courts.
And the FISA courts. And so she wanted a full investigation. And the investigation will be released here soon. And it confirms that indeed the CIA had discovered that people on the Intelligence Committee had sensitive, secret, classified information that even senators on the committee would not have classification to know, see, read. And so the CIA went into the Senate Intelligence Committee's computers and started spying to see how did they know, how did they get it, where did it come from, and this is...
You want to hear the beauty of this whole thing?
A huge issue. Go.
There had to be a private network created so they could view the unredacted version. A private internet, if you will.
Right.
So there were like 9 to 11 people with access to this, set up by, of course, the Central Intelligence Agency and the NSA in a joint effort. So the very people who were going to be reviewing this information thought, wouldn't it be great if the people we're going to review and watch for impropriety set up the very network that we're going to go view the documentation on.
Right.
Shocking that they also wanted to see what you were going to write. Then they followed you back over to the congressional network to see how you were going to feel about it, what you were going to put into the report, what you were going to allow in the report, and what the sentiment was towards the FBI or the CIA and the NSA.
Yeah, so one intelligence community member at one point, I remember the quote, said, if we've lost Dianne Feinstein, we're up S Creek without a paddle, because she was that important.
S Creek. Ass Creek.
Shit Creek.
There we go.
So it's going to be damaging, but here's really the only question, because we're short on time. Will it make any difference? Will it actually change anything, or do you think that we'll start to see movement on rolling back the surveillance state?
We'll never see movement on rolling back the surveillance state. We're only going to see growth. I don't think there's any way to limit it from a technological standpoint, because governments control the basis of entry. Even if you use Tor, even if you use anything, unless you have your own ad hoc network of private computers, you still may be subject to infiltration, just because you can't monitor every single person that joins your network. So regardless, they're always going to have a way in. And so for me, the point of creating privacy isn't to say, how can I make sure people stay out of my business? It's the opposite. How can I put myself right in the business of everyone that doesn't want me there?
Right.
Like, you know, we've talked about that before. I want to watch what every federal government employee does. I want to look at every Google search. I want it to show up in my news feed. What did Billy Joe at the Postal Service Google at 3:33 p.m. while eating Taco Bell.
Right. So Greg really fills us with a lot of hope.
Well, no, I think that it, look at, I mean, even Maya said the best way to stop an injustice or a unjust law is the full application of it. Mm-hmm. You want to stop the court system in its tracks? Anytime someone commits an infraction, immediately ticket them.
Right.
It will come to pieces in a heartbeat just based up from an efficiency standpoint.
Right. I do not believe that this will really... I think there will be internal changes, and by internal I mean within the government system. I think there will be political fallout within the system. I think John Brennan will probably get let go. He's the third CIA director. I mean, it's crazy the turnover. But John Brennan is one of the scumbag numero uno when it comes to defending and growing the surveillance state as of right now. I mean, the guy has just no scruples when it comes to spying on the American people. So hopefully he will get let go. But I don't think that it necessarily will change any broad strokes. I mean, it's illegal for the CIA to spy on within the United States on American properties. Its charter is essentially just to spy on other nations. What did you guys think about the CIA report? Also includes that which the way that Obama phrased it, he didn't realize this was going to be put in print about 100,000 times the next day. Because he put it in such a flippant way. After 9/11, we tortured some folks. It's like, and Bush got killed after he said folks on 9/11. You know, and he said, we're going to find the folks who did this and bring them to justice. Obama said it in a flippant way, but I'm not going to, he was speaking off the cuff, and we know that's not his strong suit. But, I was not surprised to hear the admission for the president that we tortured people after 9/11.
This is a guy who on day one signed shutting down Gitmo as an executive order that it'll be 8 years when he's done, and I guarantee you Gitmo will still be highly functioning and offering tropical jihad to all those interested.
Right. What's the Peffers? What is the voluntariest position on torturing?
I mean, it's not a very relevant question. Like the whole idea of a government capturing people during war, that's not a voluntary.
I understand, but here's why I ask this, okay? Because
you might as well ask me what I'm going to eat when the sky turns brown,
Right. But here's the problem with our voluntarist friends or people that want to talk about the way that it should be, which I'm all for. I think that you've got to explain the vision of where you're going. But at the same time, you've also got to apply it to current events as they're happening. This is the scenario that always pops up. You've been in the military. Mm-hmm. You are an anarcho-capitalist.
Yeah.
Mittens just opened the bathroom door.
Yeah, I have a very varied political history.
Sure. So, when you are faced with the question, well, if you've got 24 hours and 9 million Americans are going to die in a terrorist attack, and the only way to get the information from them is to torture them, you're telling me that you wouldn't torture them?
That's a baited question, and it's describing a scenario that's never existed before and will never exist.
Well, how do you know that, Dan Peffers?
Well, ultimately, I know from being in the military and whatnot, torture does not get useful data from anybody, from a prisoner of war. There's several laws you've got to follow for any POW. And when you try to breach those laws in order to get a quick answer, you get a quick answer. It's just not the right one.
Right.
And the government really wants to lift the fog of war with these things. That's really what they're trying to do. And they're trying to figure out a way to take out all the uncertainty. So if they torture people and they give an answer, and if they can assume it's the correct answer, that's a very good heuristic. A very good shortcut. They've tried that with A psychic league in or psychic organization in the CIA. The CIA actually, at one point in their history, paid psychics to use astral projection to try to figure out what America's enemies were up to.
They used it. They made a movie about it. The Men Who Stare at Goats with George Clooney and Jeff Bridges.
Well, I didn't know if that was... Or I figured that that was like some sort of...
They used remote viewing, which was a fake term.
Well, and remote viewing is a real term for a fake phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
But anyway, it's just the government's always looking for quick answers. But the thing is, you can't properly interrogate a person overnight. The thing is, the reason why we keep people in prisons for so long for violent crimes is because right now they're not talking. But in 20 years, they might change their mind about telling you who they were with that night or what they were doing, you know. And torturing people is not going to build any goodwill with them in order to try to get answers out of them. It's torturing is just going to get the quick answer. And it's just not a relevant tactic.
Right.
All it is bringing human misery. And at that point, you could use a non-aggression principle argument pretty easily.
All right. Very good. Torture, Mr. Neocon. Bomb them with freedom?
No, I mean, I saw Zero Dark Thirty. If that's what you're doing to someone, like, that's... To me, that's not torture. You know me. I'm a troll.
Right.
So, if you're going to torture somebody, do it for real. Don't do it. I mean, like, that's not...
None of this waterboarding pussy shit.
No, I mean, like, if you want to troll somebody, infiltrate Hamas. Say, I recant everything I ever said. Trojan horse it. You know, do it. Do a real... influential thing. By torturing somebody, your every action creates an equal and opposite reaction.
Right.
So if you've ever seen the movie The Kingdom, do you remember that movie with Jason Bates and Jamie Foxx and Jennifer Garner? Mm-mm. It's in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. There's a bomb that explodes on an American base in Riyadh. They send over this team that investigates the who is responsible. They end up finding this person that's the bomb maker, being able to trace it back on how the bomb was made. Yeah. At the very end, it's essentially like shootout at the OK Corral. Everybody's killing each other, and then it ends with Jamie Foxx going to tell Jason Bateman's parents, or Jason Bateman's kids, don't worry, we're going to get whoever's responsible for this. And then the child of the bomb maker, someone in his family going, don't worry, we're going to get whoever.
Right.
You're creating, you're cementing what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
And so, to me, the unoriginal is all that exists.
Sure.
It's time for some new thinking in order to handle these situations.
You're just the sadist to do it.
I am just the sadist to export freedom. The Onion arguably has the best stance on foreign policy on how to handle the Middle East. A 377 million individual state solution.
Yeah, exactly. I posted that on Facebook, but for some reason it was set. My wall was set to automatically post as private.
Oh.
An essay.
Well, it's because you're posting too many nudes.
But I do want to run to this nudes, real quick, because you're feeling that Hamas is justified and the Palestinian state deserves recognition or no?
I'm very wishy-washy on all this, because as of now, if you look at it at an individual level, those who live in Israel, who are Jews that live in Israel, the country, have homesteaded land at this point. But I also understand that 70 years ago, that was homesteaded by people who are ticked off now. And Israel, you know, Palestinians are having their homesteads shrunk and shrunk and shrunk in Gaza and the West Bank. And I don't know what the answer is. I want to throw in the towel and just say, like, I don't even want to have an opinion on this anymore because I'm so frustrated and there's no clear solution here, you know? And so much of foreign policy is so unpredictable. I'd be the worst foreign policy president of all time because I'd be like, what do I do here? What do I do? What do I do?
I really like Ron Paul's idea. Yeah, just quit sending them foreign aid, and then they'll realize that killing each other is not so productive.
It'll just both sides will be throwing stones at that point. But well, you know,
at least it's harder to kill each other with rocks.
Sure,
right?
But the Palestinians that you see most often don't necessarily care about a Palestinian state. And it almost seems like they never really did. That Yasser Arafat had two fronts. He was like the mob. He had the Satriel's meat market and the, you know, he had the waste management company. But then in the back of Satriel's and the waste management company, he's like chopping people up in the meat
grinder. There was a bucket of acid.
Right. You know, there's, you know, the Arafat and the PLO, and then as it exists now, say they want a Palestinian state, but they don't want a Palestinian state. They want a, they want the Israeli state to not exist.
So any, to me, even, and this is just practicality, I don't care about original right, I don't care about any of that, any removal of support ends in genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Yep.
It's the immediate genocide.
I do agree with that.
They can defend themselves for however much they, or however well armed they are right now, whatever their reserves are. Beyond that, they're done.
Right.
Because they are outnumbered on every side. And if it was not for us propping up Egypt's leader with this technocratic government overthrowing the Muslim Brotherhood, these Hamas tunnel networks would be flowing in arms trade. We have stopped the entire shipment of arms into Hamas, and then the Muslim or the Egyptian government is getting killed. Muslims are being tarred and feathered in Egypt because we are propping up this Egyptian leader who is stopping anything from reaching Hamas. They are blockaded by the Israelis. Their tunnel networks are being decimated by the Israeli defense system. And we control the Egyptian leader who won't let anyone even near where you would get shipments of arms in. Hmm. So I have a hard time when I listen to, like, Arafat and Sharon. To me, the lesson is this, is that what creates stability is fear. And I hate to say that because it's horrible. And all it does is create those reactions you don't want and the atrocities. But I look at Syria, and you, earlier you had mentioned we would have had troops in the ground. I thought the whole time, and if you listen to like our podcast, we were going to support Assad without a shadow of a doubt because sure. It was stability. If Barack Obama is anything, he isn't dumb. He sees what happens in Iraq, what happened in Iraq. He played the politics part of it, but in Iraq, we destabilized a government and we created a nightmare.
Right.
In Syria, you have somebody that gassed their own people with sarin and violated every humanitarian treaty that exists or contract that exists. But it's better than the Al-Nusra Front and ISIS taking over Damascus and waiting for Jesus Christ to arrive in the eastern part of Damascus.
Right.
So what direction, if all support's pulled out, what direction would you say this genocide would go?
Oh, the Israelis are slaughtered.
Really?
Now, granted, they're going to hold off whoever they want. But the only reason we're able to control this situation and contain this situation is because we contain what's going on around Gaza. Lebanon doesn't want any part of this because they got killed in the 80s. Right now, Morocco, the very first country to ever recognize the United States as a country, is dangerously close to falling prey to being the last, I guess you could call it, Arab fall. Jordan is seeing mass unrest. You're seeing a powder keg. Egypt, they democratically elected the Muslim Brotherhood, who would have funneled all the weapons Hamas would have needed. And right now, we overthrew that regime and put in the head of the army to run the government.
Here's the thing, though. Israel has several advantages with their defensive conflicts. Like in the Six-Day War, they had three fronts, all coordinated by Yasser Arafat. And when they ended the Six-Day War, they ended it with more territory than they began it with.
How did they get their rockets, planes, defense systems, the Iron Dome? Who developed the Iron Dome? All of that is American.
Yeah, but the
technology.
Sunday.
There is.
Barack Obama, for instance, chewed out Netanyahu on Sunday, saying that he had to have a ceasefire. Monday, they sent a request for more arms, and the United States fulfilled it.
And now, as of the recording of this podcast, there's a second 72-hour ceasefire. Hmm. We control it all.
Right. Hmm.
If we back out, they have enough weapons to hold people off for a year, year and a half. When that ends, and right now the way Hamas and other Islamic organizations are dominating social media, I mean, look at this. I mean, he went from a pro-Israel, and he's slowly over time changed. You definitely would support not a Palestinian state, but a Palestinian right to live there without a shadow of a doubt voluntarily.
Just anybody who happens to be human and capable that wants to go there. Homesteading, you know,
right.
should be allowed to live there.
Exactly. And in principle, I couldn't agree more. The nature of the beast is that no one would ever want to go there voluntarily right now as a Jewish person without Israel's support of the United States military.
Well, there's also other considerations. One, Israel is on the high ground. Palestine is in a valley, I believe, but Israel holds most of the mountain land.
They hold a majority of it, but
they also have sea access. They also have planes. There's all sorts of people who will sell them weapons if they can manage to keep their economy going well. If they had to do it by themselves, I think they could do it, and I think it would teach them a good lesson about trying to just start fights with everybody.
Who would sell it to them?
Who would sell it to them? There's plenty of people. I mean, Sweden is a very big arms dealer. They were the ones who invented the AT-4, which is...
How do they get their power?
How do they get their power? What do you mean?
How do they essentially... Like, probably 60% of the oil they use in order to heat their homes and keep their economy running and fuel their cars, where does it come from?
It probably comes from the Middle East somewhere. It
comes from Russia.
Comes from Russia. And Russia is taking the opposite.
Russia props up Syria.
Okay.
Who wants to.
There are other people to buy oil from. There's.
Who?
I mean.
The Middle East?
The Turkish probably wouldn't sell it.
No, they recognize Palestine. Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at a world that's extremely lonely. The British, the French,
the
Americans.
Who can sell them?
They get their. Sweden, Finland, Iceland. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, everyone gets their oil. That's the whole point of Syria. Norway
is a huge oil exporter.
They're a huge oil exporter as a percentage of their economy on a global scale. They're a drop in a bucket.
Okay.
I'm talking about the majority of oil comes through the Ukraine and through Syria through the pipeline. The whole point of Syria was Qatar wanted to build a pipeline through Syria to supply oil with Europe.
The problem with this whole situation was... Israel, or everybody in that area, is suffering because of mistakes of map drawers.
Exactly.
And now, you know, that's the whole reason why I don't want us to be involved, is because we were the map drawers in the first place. And now everything's getting even more screwed up.
Well, this is the non-interventionist challenge as you try to reconcile this. How do you withdraw from all of this? I mean, it's one thing to say... We're just going to stop sending aid and we're just going to stop doing all this. But that has... It's like we've been giving the world heroin. A lot of heroin for a very long time. And then as soon as you start pulling that heroin, you got to do it a little bit... Do you do it slowly? Do you just rip
You have to
rip
accept,
it off or what? You,
you
know?
Have to accept and be willing to...
Well, I think this is an opportunity where... A lot of libertarians are going to try to volunteer an answer to this question, and it is very tempting to, because it's such a big issue, and having an opinion on this topic will get a spotlight. But the problem is sometimes problems don't have solutions.
Sure, and that certainly is the flip side of the argument. Yeah, once you start pulling back support.
Yeah.
There's going to be pain, and there's going to be a lot of pain, just like there would be with the economics when we stop with printing money.
Fractional reserve and
sure,
fiat currency.
But
sometimes
there's pain.
When you've screwed things up so much, you just gotta,
you gotta
let
hit
it
the
run
reset.
Its course and hope for the best.
But unfortunately, in this situation, economics and losing jobs, and that's one thing. This is like wholesale genocide. You know, that's the part that makes it tough, but
which we accept in other areas of the world.
But
in the Sudan and the South Sudan, we accept genocide.
By continuing our behavior, we just continue to promote murder and war and more genocide just in different ways.
The problem is you've got these two groups of people who seem to hate each other so much.
Whose governments seem to hate each other so much.
Governments, yes. Seem to hate each other so much. I guess there is that hashtag refuse to be enemies or whatever.
That's the thing. The Palestinian people aren't enemies.
Yeah.
Leaders are enemies.
I mean, I saw several tweets where husbands and wives, would be Hebrew, one would be
Palestinian,
and they would post pictures of them together kissing and whatnot with a certain hashtag. I think it's refuse to be enemies or something.
Exactly. No, yeah, you're right.
And yeah, I think on a certain level, it's not the populace who is buying into this bullshit. The problem is when you have something like this, you really need to overthrow both governments at once.
The thing is, though,
and you need the people to do it, and I think social networking is going to be a big part of killing the violence. If you can say without a shadow of a doubt that a government does not have the mandate of its people, the government is in huge shit.
Or, and this was going to be the one thing I was going to say earlier, because you're obviously influenced by this whole situation, what you've encountered on social media.
Sure, it's completely, absolutely.
Would you agree as well, seeing those husband and wives? That's, we're not enemies.
I think in this situation, your best bet is to try to find individuals who have ideas to stem the violence and to stymie all this, and try to get them as much exposure as you can.
And
if you get a bunch of people, you will just speak out against their government, and will disobey against their government for the cause of peace. Then that's the only way I see there actually being hope.
Would you feel that the husband and wife that you saw, was that more or less prevalent than the anti-Israeli support on social media and the different social networks?
I don't like going and reading a lot.
I've got stats on it. So
I'm willing to believe that there's probably more people in support of each other than in support of blowing each other up.
And that is where you would be wrong. So keep in mind, right now, any organization that is labeled a terrorist network of the State Department of the United States, so Twitter, in their service agreement, can ban any user who affiliates with a designated terrorist organization of the United States government. So Hamas...
I'm sure you agree to a lot of other things in the EU.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No doubt about it. But that's one of the clauses. And so any individual that identifies with Hamas, ISIS, anyone that's a terrorist organization, uses Twitter, their account can be banned, no question asked, and shut down and deleted. So obviously Hamas, I would say, is at a structural disadvantage. Israel has a verified account of the Israeli Defense Ministry that puts out Israeli news stories about Israeli children that were harmed, about schools that were hurt, about Israeli individuals who are watching the terror that's being wreaked upon them by the Israeli or the Gaza rockets.
So, and basically a phone bank for anything shitty that Palestine,
correct,
has.
And with all the structural disadvantages that Hamas has, last week the hashtag, and I'm gonna get it wrong, I'm sorry, but like free or defend Israel, essentially something along those lines, and then recognize the Palestinian state or Gaza, hashtag Gaza for free, anything pro-Gaza, anything pro-Israel, was 36,000 to 622,000 retweets more positive for Hamas. With all the structural advantages, and anyone that retweeted that is subject to closure of their account.
No kidding.
That's pretty amazing to me. And so the point isn't necessarily that I support Hamas or that I believe the Palestinians have a right to a state. Ultimately, all I believe is that individuals can live wherever they want to as long as they don't shoot and kill each other. Even if a Palestinian wants to live next to an Israeli, their rights exist up until that Israeli's fist. And the same for the Israeli.
Yeah, it's so hard to come up with an answer for this because there's all sorts of problems. One, if the genocide is going to go one way or the other, how do you pick a side?
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is now here's the point: is I was influenced by this, and I'll be the first to admit it. You were influenced, and you were influenced. Let me read you the results of a study that were recently conducted on behalf of the federal government and the usefulness of social media.
This sounds like one of those sentences that precede egg on my face.
No, because I am subject to this as well. I am the first person to admit that I fell subject to something that is open to government interference.
So you're saying yes, but me too.
Oh, when I read this, I pinned it on myself first. Okay. I'm not blaming you guys. I'm just seeing if you felt the same way I did to see if it was necessary.
Let's hear it.
So, okay, here are the results of the study. Sorry, one second. I had to get to it.
Master of suspense.
This is the abstract from the study from the Yale Medical School. Emotional states can be transferred to others via emotional contagion, leading people to experience the same emotions without their awareness. Emotional contagion is well established in laboratory experiments with people transferring positive and negative emotions to others. Data from a large real-world social network collected over a 20-month period suggests that longer-lasting moods, examples, depression, happiness, support, can be transferred through networks. This references the study by J.H. Fowler, Christiakis, N.A., I'm not sure what his first and middle name are, from a 2008 report. Although those results are controversial, in an experiment with people who use Facebook, they conducted this without anyone's knowledge. We participated in it.
I did hear about this.
We test whether emotional contagion occurs outside of or in-person interaction between individuals, reducing the amount of emotional content in the newsfeed. When positive expressions were reduced, people produced fewer positive posts and more negative posts. When negative expressions were reduced, the opposite pattern occurred. These results indicate that emotions expressed by others on Facebook influence our own emotions, constituting experimental evidence for massive-scale contagion via social networks. This work also suggests that in contrast to prevailing assumptions, in-person interaction and nonverbal cues are not strictly necessary for emotional contagion, which is pretty revolutionary. And that the observation of others' positive experiences constitutes a positive experience for other people. Nationalism.
Yeah, for sure.
One thing, though, is I thought I had heard somewhere. Wish I had a source for this.
I'm just going to make this up.
I'm not making it up, yeah. But I mean, I'm not going to claim that I have a source either that I can
quote. No, but if you Googled the right keywords, you'd find evidence for this.
I mean, I'd love it if one of our listeners told me if this was something that I had right or wrong, but I had heard that Facebook had done that study, but they had realized that the effect wasn't as robust as people were making it out to seem. Like it was, it would affect one post out of 1,000 that you posted personally, sort of statistic.
At a certain point late last year, I just decided that I was seeing too many negative political posts. I was tired of it. So I started liking positive posts. Most of the positive stuff in my Facebook comes from high school friends, you know, or people that are personal friends. Most of the negative stuff comes from libertarian friends. and so my Facebook feed, by and large, is now mostly positive. It's mostly females, and it's mostly positive stuff because it's...
A lot of selfies.
Well, because women are usually posting pictures of their family and how great their life is and how good their kids are, and the kids are winning trophies.
Oh, man.
And
why does everyone on Facebook think that you want to see pictures of their kids all the time?
I do. I love seeing my friends.
Because you're either a part of an experiment or you've liked those pages.
Right.
I know I'm part of an experiment.
And my Facebook experience is much better, and I don't know if that's part of emotional contagion or if it's just the algorithm, because I consciously chose to just start... stop following these negative people.
See, that's why I try to focus on getting as much science news on my feed as possible. Because every time I see science news, it's like, we're going to Mars in 15 years. Or we've got this brand new engine that breaks the laws of physics. Or you're going to live to be 300.
Sounds, you know, like these are the stories to me.
These stories are great to read, though.
So, do you guys feel you maybe, and it's hard as an individual to say, yes, I've actually been subject to propaganda, and what I actually believe and believe is real, through filtering and through framing of the sources of my news.
And whenever you're in the midst of any kind of war, it's all propaganda.
Yeah, just,
I mean, the whole point of these documentaries that I watched on Palestinians on Netflix, the whole point of these documentaries were to influence my decision by using emotional stories.
Oh, for because, sure. Dead kids in the United Nations lockers was the big one I saw today on hashtag Gaza.
You know, so it's all emotional manipulation because you take the human plight and apply it because it relates to your personal. That's like journalism 101. That's the first thing that we learned. It's like we live in Indiana, and this Ebola virus doctor, his parents live here in Indiana. And so doctor with Indiana ties contracts Ebola, comes back to the United States. It's like, how does it really – why does it make it more newsworthy to me if he's from Indiana?
Vanity. I might know him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he's somebody from my social circles. oh, that could be me. It's very self-absorbed.
And how will this translate into a higher likelihood of catching Ebola?
Right. It's all that's journalism 101. It's relate it back in some way to how evoke a personal emotion out of that person.
Yeah.
That's journalism. And that's the news. That's not advertising or marketing, which also those skills are used there too. This is journalism classes from high school and college where we were taught that. We use laughter here at We Are Libertarians because we figure if we make you laugh, then you'll stick around instead of, so this week.
Oh, listening to Libertarian Solutions.
Hey, don't make fun of Nick Coons. That was not.
He's a smart guy.
Welcome to NPR, where right. You will hear my lips smack as I eat a bag of crackers.
Right.
So, I thought you were going to say shvetty balls.
Shvetty balls.
So, yeah, emotional manipulation. So, anyways, we got to wrap this up because.
Yeah,
the president needs his sleep.
Yes, we're getting, running on 3 hours now?
Even the president is susceptible to government propaganda is what I'm hearing.
That's right. 2 hours on this podcast. They've got a solid 4 hours coming their way tomorrow. So I don't want to hear any complaining out of you, Samantha Wotees.
Well, if you do the math, then you still owe them several dozen hours for missed podcasts. Maybe not several dozen.
What happened? I was looking at Snapchat.
You said 4 hours of content was consolation for who knows how many hours of missed content.
Hey, you know what? Why don't you move to Las Vegas or California or Denver, wherever you're going? Get!
I don't know.
Get! I know, you don't know. I don't either. All right, so let's get on our soapboxes. Let's finish up here. Let's give the people their final... let's give the final... Never mind, I'm not going to say that. That was, I almost had a bad one there. I'll tell you guys later.
Okay.
Soapbox. Final thing. Self-promotion. Stories that we missed. Arguments that you feel were not addressed in this episode. Dan Peffers.
Well, for one, please follow me on Twitter. And if you post good news articles, then I'll probably follow you back so I could actually get my show prep done.
All right.
And then,
help you.
Yeah. And my Twitter handle is Daniel Peffers.
Right. Up in smoke.
Yeah. Also, if you use Tor, be careful because also there was DEF CON in Las Vegas, the big hacker convention.
Mm-hmm.
There was a talk on de-anonymizing the Tor network being put on by, I think it was somebody from MIT, and it was mysteriously canceled. At the last minute. No,
there's no need to de-anonymize something that's anonymous.
The speculation is. The reason they didn't do the talk is because they tried it out and it worked.
It's done.
Gregory?
It has been done. The only thing I would say is that as much I believe in the internet and its ability to democratize everything in order to shine sunshine on bad actors and expose the fraud that's committed, just Google Planetir Technologies. Planetir. Technologies. Look at who their board of directors are. Look who they receive funding from. What you're going to find is a company called InQtel. They are a Arlington, Virginia-based venture capital firm that provides...
So made up.
Well, that would, because it's from the CIA. It's the CIA's venture capital arm, and they make no bones about it. They also have investments in a company called... Recounting the Future, or something along those lines. You'll see it when you Google it. This is a company that uses predictive intelligence in order to predict the future, in order to predict who's a terrorist threat.
Sounds familiar.
And it's from a Swedish individual that came to America and built this, and the European Union, the United States, all of these companies. If you even go to Oracle databases, Oracle started out as a CIA project with funding from InQtel. So all these... hugely transformative, democratic. The web is going to change things. Hamas, you know, we're going to expose all these people. Just look at where the money runs.
In
QTEL.
There would be a really surprising, prominent libertarian name.
If you like, if you've seen The Social Network, you've seen him. Right. If you've ever used PayPal, this is the individual that has your bank account information.
Right.
His name's Peter Thiel, runs the Founders Fund. wants to do the Seasteading Institute with Milton Friedman's grandson. This is arguably one of the most prominent, well-connected, wealthy libertarians that exist, maybe the most. He invested $20 million up front in their Series A venture capital in Planetier Technologies, and shockingly, they are immensely profitable, which usually profitable companies go public.
Right.
Because the share of their stock prices go through the roof, and their executive officers see their stock options be worth no longer hundreds of millions, but tens of billions. Not this company. They're staying private.
Right.
They don't want to have to disclose who their actual list of clients are.
So in a roundabout way, you're saying Peter Thiel helped invest in Prism.
That is exactly right, because the software that they offer that is their most popular offering is a software that uses key logging and predictive intelligence in order to predict what you think, who you're most associated with, what you like, and somehow it's named Prism. What was the name of that thing that Edward Snowden leaked?
Oh, yeah, it's called Prism.
Well, it's called Prism.
Right.
I'm sure it's I'm sure.
Next thing you're going to tell me, Jeffrey Tucker's head of the EPA.
I know. I know. And I think you know that I am as anti-conspiracy theory as it gets. But I just kept clicking on link after clicking on link to find out. Well, I've never heard of this guy.
It's not really a conspiracy theory. It's one guy who did something shady.
You know what?
Wait till you see their executive board and what their backgrounds are. If you do it, if you Google Planetier Technologies, I encourage everyone to click through the board of directors. I encourage everyone to click through who their C-level suite executives are. Go see their backgrounds. Pull up LinkedIn. Look at where they've worked before. Look at what they do. It's not entirely different than Oracle. Larry Ellison, one of the most wealthy men in America, was also a college dropout. He was lionized as one of the American entrepreneurs that became a billionaire from adoptive parents. And all of a sudden, he went out to California and surfed in his convertible and learned how to program and do database management. Then all of a sudden, he started working on a project called Oracle that was funded by .. CIA.
Right.
Now he's a billionaire.
Doesn't Oracle develop JavaScript?
Yep.
You mean the programming
Java.
No, Java. That's Sun Microsystems.
Who is owned by Oracle now?
Oh, they're owned by Oracle?
And Java a major engine that helps run most of the stuff on the web?
They were one of the original languages, and now it's open source like Tor, except that that's not anonymous anymore.
Well, the thing about JavaScript is it's always been a poorly performing aspect of the internet. If it worked on a web page, it was probably
like
done
a government project, huh?
But if it was working, I remember back in the early millennium, if it was working on a page, it wasn't written in Java, and if it was broken and not having trouble functioning, it was probably written in Java. You know, Java, you got to install third party software.
You get a little update, and it's got like little orange squiggly lines, and it says your Java update is ready, provided by Oracle Systems Incorporated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but it's
AKA
just
the government.
But I mean, the thing is, Java's just been very buggy. It's been a poor platform poor for the internet over the years, and I just wish we'd just move on to the more to better systems like HTML5 and CSS and whatnot.
All right, kiddos. Well, I don't have anything, I don't think. I think I've said too much already.
What about Josiah Crohn's?
Oh, screw that bastard.
I won't eat a potato for 2 months.
You know what? I've lost 40 pounds. You've lost 50 to 75. You don't weigh yourself. You don't know. He's lost 85.
He's lost his brother.
Aww.
He said his brother was going to come, and his brother's not here.
Yeah.
You lost him.
You dropped 300.
I said my brother might come.
You dropped 370 pounds of dead weight. 170 of that is beard, okay?
True. Very true. It's a heavy beard.
Right. It's a very dense, thick beard. Much like Michelle Bachmann's. Much like Michelle Bachmann's husband. Hello.
Booyah.
Yeah. All right. For you kids who don't understand what a beard is, look it up.
Oh, okay. I got
you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We hope to see you next time. Next episode will be hosted by Maya. So, Greg, you may be here.
If they're willing to do it at like 9 a.m., I'm going to be here. Because I can't wait to see Maya and talk about how I can't view her. I'll ask her if she's not on social media anymore.
You know, I have never met Maya.
Never met Maya after all these years of being involved in We Are Libertarians?
All these
Years.
Two-thirds of a year?
It's been years.
No, it's been over years.
It's been years.
Oh. It was 2012, late fall.
No, yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
Old late timer. Fall, I met you for the first time.
He's been here for what?
I've been here since November of 2012, and I met him at the end of November when it was you and your glaucoma-free brother.
Yeah.
Time really flies.
Best
know?
Eyesight on two brothers I've ever seen in my
We've
life.
We've got clear, awesome eyesight. Clear, we have no pain from our glaucoma.
Clear pupils. Eyes are a little red.
Yeah.
It's but just, that's allergies.
It's an indication of good blood flow, you know?
It's the liberty.
I've got good circulation in these eyes.
It's the liberty.
It's the liberty.
Out of my eyes.
I bleed liberty through my eyeballs.
As well as regular blood.
You know, I could say that we're joking, but then you want to move to Colorado, and that just totally blows the joke. So
I don't think anybody cares
Are
anymore.
You a pothead fucker? So, all right. Thank you for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We won't see you next time. Next time, you get Maya and whoever Maya invites, because she said, I want to host an episode of The Big Show. And I said, all right. I'm willing to lose all our audience. So
I'll be your Huckleberry.
So I would like to say that next time we'll...
It'll be worse because we're not on it.
Right. I would like to say at the end of this episode, Greg, as always, next time...
No, you have had the longest absence in history. As always, we promise to do better next time.
Correct. But that... cannot be true because
it's Maya.
We will not be here.
It's social terrorism 101.
Right. It's not going to be better. It's going to be far worse.
It'll be like jihad for your ears.
Right. You're going to regret this, but you people asked for it.
It'll be
like
the B message boards.
If you don't like it, you can blame Samantha.
It's going to feel a lot like if Nicolas Cage were to do a National Treasure movie right now.
In your living room, in front of your face, a live action playlet in your living room with Nicolas Cage.
Yep, except very much more conspiratorial.
You're going to get freedom. You're going to get freedom shoved in your mouth, and you're going to like it, or else freedom's trigger will be pulled.
Just a little tidbit, in case you are friends with Maya on social media, immediately, when you hear this, if you make it this long, defriend her right now.
No, block.
That collective action voluntarily committed will force her to become a socialist.
You know what? Somebody should start a Block Maya Axton Facebook page.
I might.
You should.
I won't even put a picture up. I'll just make it completely blank, but have everything else filled out.
Block Maya Axton, that'd make her go crazy.
Yep.
Isn't it time that we start taking our power back and troll the trollers?
You thought this whole time I haven't been trolling Maya?
No, because there are times where she got you pretty good.
Oh, I wanted her to. Machiavelli. Yeah.
Right. Sun Tzu. I've been reading Sun Tzu.
When I made her so mad, who did she hit?
Just because.
Me. You're right. That's because she didn't want plastique hooked up to her front door for her face to
People
be
fear freedom.
Right. So, all right, well, I guess we can't really end with our tagline.
Two episodes from now, as always,
we promise
to do better next time.